We've been hearing a lot about feral cat problems in our community and have talked about the threat of things like toxoplasmosis in the environment. But today we focus on cat scratch fever. Dr. Jessica Kosit joins us live today to tell us more about what researchers found. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Catherine.
Yes. Yeah, so tell our listeners, share with our listeners your position at the UH Medical School and also with Kapi'olani Medical Center.
So I am a pediatric hospitalist at Kapi'olani, which means I take care of hospitalized children. And then I am on the faculty at the School of Medicine and oversee residents and medical students as they rotate through Kapi'olani on their pediatric rotations or in the residency program.
So tell us about this study.
So one of our residents, Scarlett Johnson, myself, and one of our infectious disease specialists, Dr. Natasha Ching, we were noticing increasing numbers of children hospitalized with what we call disseminated cat scratch. So not what we had previously known as regular cat scratch disease, but a far more severe version that was spread further in the body. And when we started noticing that, we said, let's go back and look at our charts. Let's see how many children we've actually seen with this over the last 8 years and try to better understand what these children have and how we treated them, and so that we can, moving forward, set up some guidelines for other clinicians to better diagnose it and better treat it.
Right, because you just looked at numbers at your hospital?
Correct.
So what did you find?
We found that over an eight-year period, we actually had 18 children, 16 of whom were hospitalized for prolonged periods of time, where they had cat scratch involving their liver, their spleen, different parts of bone. Two children had encephalitis, which is an inflammation of the brain, and one child had uveitis, which was inflammation of one of his eyes.
So what is cat scratch fever exactly?
So cat scratch disease is when typically a kitten, but could be an adult cat, scratches someone and basically inoculates them with this bacteria called Bartonella henslei. It then spreads, and usually what we see is inflamed lymph nodes in the area of where the scratch was. So if they get a scratch on the hand, it might be lymph nodes by the elbow or under the arm, or sometimes even as far as the neck. And that's the classic presentation: swollen lymph nodes, fever, some, you know, feeling tired. And they see their doctor and they get put on antibiotics and usually feel better a short time later. For whatever reason, in these children, we're seeing it sort of get past the lymph node gatekeeper, if you will, for the immune system. And it's then getting into the liver, the spleen, the bone, and causing much more severe disease and requiring hospitalization for these children, and then requiring fairly long courses of antibiotics, which in and of themselves can have a lot of side effects.
Now, the numbers, how do they compare with the mainland?
They're 3.5 times as high as what we've seen in a study that was done on the mainland that was actually published by the Centers for Disease Control.
Is this a reportable disease?
It is encouraged to be reported, but not technically one of the ones that we immediately called the Department of Health for.
Now, I recall just growing up, when I thought of cat scratch fever, I thought that you had to actually get like bitten by a cat and that it had something to do with what was in his saliva.
So we do think it requires some degree of inoculation, but can be from their claws as well as from their teeth. And so, I think that's what makes it challenging, is that it might be a pretty trivial scratch that ends up resulting in the disease. So often when our patients come to see us, there isn't this recollection of this big bite. It might have just been, you know, a child playing with a cat and getting a little scratch. And then the other thing that makes it difficult is that it's often several weeks later, and particularly for children, they're not going to remember that. And if their, you know, parents aren't on top of them, they're not going to perhaps know about that incident.
So it could be from a pet cat or a feral cat.
Correct. We think typically it's going to be cats that have more fleas, and so typically that's going to be the feral cat population. But it's spread by these fleas, so if you have an outdoor cat, they could be exposed to it as well. Controlling fleas in your cat could definitely make a difference. But yeah, it can be present in your household cat versus feral cats.
But you really don't know.
You really don't know.
I mean, I was in Huaikai, and I was surprised to see coming out at twilight all these eyes across the street at the park and ride. And I drove my car in there and counted some 50 cats just in that one corner. And as I was driving out, there was a whole bunch more cats coming out of the woodwork because someone was there feeding the the cat caregivers. But I was just like, wow, that's a lot of cats.
It is. And we, you know, we have a large feral cat population here. And that was originally documented by some physicians at Tripler about 10 years ago. The Humane Society has worked very hard to do, you know, the spay and neuter and release program in order to control the population. But if these cats already have Bartonella in their system, they're going to continue to spread it as fleas are present. And so that's going to be a difficult thing to control.
Right. And I know the caregivers try to control the colonies and bring the numbers down. But then people, irresponsible pet owners, drop their cats off.
Yes.
You know, and I'm a cat lover. I've had cats. But so it's kind of interesting to learn all these things that we're now finding out about.
Yes, and I, you know, it is hard to want to tell children when a cute cat comes up to you that you don't, you know, instinctively children want a pet and so do adults, but that there's a risk associated with that and being aware that they carry disease just like many animals can.
So what's the hope with this research now?
The hope is, one, that we spread awareness amongst families and people, one, to control fleas in their own cats, two, to be, like you described, being responsible animal owners, taking care of your pets and not just letting them go, trying to work with the Humane Society to limit the population. But then also, if you develop these symptoms, to recognize what those are and be able to tell your physician, because that obviously will make it much easier to make the diagnosis, but also for us to share with clinicians that this is out there. We are seeing a lot more of this, and these are these kind of interesting variations in their presentation. So if you're seeing a child with this and they aren't getting better on what we may consider more traditional antibiotics, to consider this and to send testing for it.
Right. But you looked at a children's cases, but adults too could be.
This would apply to adults as well. I do think, you know, we typically see the vulnerable populations as being the young and the elderly, but a lot of these things will apply to adults in the same way, and the antibiotic treatment choices are very similar.
Okay. So arm ourselves with education. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
We've been chatting with Dr. Jessica Kosett of the University of Hawaii School of Medicine and from the Kapi'olani Medical Center about why Hawaii's cases of cat scratch fever are so high compared to the rest of the country. I'm Catherine Cruz. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR1.